$11 billion. That was the expected amount that people would spend online yesterday to get those Cyber Monday deals. Black Friday also saw an increase in internet sales. Cyber commerce continues to grow as consumers increasingly turn to the convenience of online shopping and a myriad of other services. It's fast and easy, but it can also be risky. As holiday shopping ramps up, what do you need to know about the latest scams and how to keep yourself safe? Cybersecurity experts join us with tips to help you protect yourself and your money today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Your phone rings, you answer, and an automated voice says, your credit card has been compromised. Press 1 for more information. Or you get an email that says your bank account was hacked and you need to immediately click on the link to fix it. Should you? The quick answer is no. But there are many other more sophisticated attempts to steal your information, and this time of year, the scammers are working overtime to siphon off your money. How can you avail yourself of the great online deals over the holidays without getting ripped off? Our guests today are focused on cybersecurity and are here to answer your questions about avoiding theft. Mark Brunig is the cybersecurity expert with CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Mark is based in Palmer. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Lori, and thank you for inviting me to the show.
I'm glad to have you in the studio. It's always nice to have guests in person with us today. And also in the studio is FBI Special Agent Elliot Peterson. Elliot specializes in online security. Hello.
Hello.
And you're based in the Anchorage office, is that correct?
I am, yes.
All right. Thank you both for being here. You can also join us, Alaskans. You're welcome to call in to get your internet security questions answered by experts. Have you experienced attempts to get your information either online or on the phone? Are you unsure of how to keep your home internet system protected? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also send us email. Send that to talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Mark, describe CISA's work. You're kind of a relatively new agency, right?
We are. Thank you. So we are actually the newest federal agency, starting in 2018 under the Department of Homeland Security. And really our role is to be the nation's risk advisor. So we work with partners to defend against today's threats and collaborate to build more secure and resilient infrastructure for the future. We work primarily with state, local, territorial, and tribal organizations. We refer to SLTT, as well as sector critical infrastructure organizations. That's everything from power to healthcare. Mm-hmm. There are 16 sectors. I won't go over all of them. And so really we're here to defend against the imminent threats of today and take proactive steps to secure the nation against threats for tomorrow.
Mm, all right. CISA, though, has no regulatory or law enforcement authority, correct? How do you fight online crime then?
Correct. So that's a very good point, and that's a fundamental difference between us and a lot of other federal agencies, like the FBI, for example. Our role is to come alongside and partner and to build that collaboration. It's voluntary, and there are actually laws in place that protect people that work with us from disclosure of information, even including FOIA. In certain services that we provide, they are not FOIA-able, so organizations that work with us, again, being voluntary, they don't have to worry about disclosure of information. We're non-regulatory. There are certain areas within CISA that are, but our group is not.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for getting us started, Mark. I want to turn to you now, Elliot. You worked in Pittsburgh before Anchorage. Are the online security concerns fairly universal, or are there regional scams and particular theft attempts that are particular to Alaska?
It's a really great question. So we do see certainly some localized attempts, and you'll notice that not in the election cycle, right, because you were getting phone calls from everyone probably during the election. But outside of that, we're starting to see a lot of 907 numbers, dialing 907 numbers for fraud. And they understand that's because people tend to trust local numbers. So in Pittsburgh, I would tend to see a lot more localized fraud because it was a bigger population base. But a lot of the schemes we saw there maybe 5-6 years ago have started to happen here within the last, you know, several years.
Mm-hmm. Does the work that you're both doing, how does it overlap, or are you focused on different areas?
Well, as Mark said, we are, but we actually have worked together for years and years collaboratively. You know, I'm really focused on trying to identify and hopefully hold accountable some of the people maybe breaking some of the laws, but maybe we learn things that CISA can amplify because CISA does a lot of the public messaging toward the cybersecurity communities, putting out a lot of the information relating to best practices. So we view our jobs as completely complementary.
Okay, great. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking about cybersecurity, both for the holidays and just in general to keep yourself safe online. We have security experts in-house with us today. Mark Brunig is the security coordinator and cybersecurity and infrastructure with CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And Elliot Peterson is a special agent with the FBI and also focuses on cybersecurity. You can join us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. The Federal Trade Commission reports consumers lost more than $5.8 billion in 2021, a 70% increase over the prior year. A fraud case this month in Alaska was elder fraud, where a woman in Yakutat was robbed of $700,000 over 2 years. Just horrible. Elders living alone are big targets. How can families help protect their older relatives from these crimes? I think about especially if people are here and at a great distance from other family members. Who wants to take that one? You want to start us off, Mark?
Sure. Thank you. So that's a very good question. And the answer is there's a lot of different things, but it starts with awareness, right? And so maybe other family members helping come alongside their elderly partners to say, hey, be aware when you're online or when you're getting a phone call, what are the things that you're going to be presented with? And a lot of it is a sense of compassion, especially during this time of year. We see a lot of charitable fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really pull on the heartstrings and make an emotional appeal. And especially the elderly, they want to reach out. They want to help. They feel bad. And so that's one way. But just that awareness. And that's just one example, Elliot.
And it's such a drag to, you know, it's kind of a double bummer that charities need that help. And so then, you know, Absolutely. It might make people more hesitant to actually help out because they're not sure of what they can trust. Elliot, what can you advise in that respect?
So I think if you have an elderly person in your life, being very involved and proactive and understanding when they're engaging in high-risk activity. And so if they are thinking about large purchases, when you start to think about vehicles, used vehicles, other items, it's really dangerous online to try to negotiate some of those sales, especially person to person. And then even with things like investments or large purchases or online banking, it's really helpful to sometimes be able to look over their shoulder at how they're doing those things. One of the things you'll probably hear from Mark and I a lot today is two-factor authentication, especially where maybe you have somebody in your life that doesn't understand how to implement two-factor authentication. Almost all online services now support that, and that provides a really enhanced security versus just having something secured with a simple password. And so for elderly and others, there's a lot of instances where criminals get access to their accounts and then are able to siphon funds out. And a lot of times that would be prevented if they'd had two-factor authentication on their accounts.
You know, that's so interesting because just recently my bank they were offline for a little bit. When they came back, I went to log in, and they, you know, a window popped up that said, "We're going to send a code to your phone that you have on file here." And I thought, well, that's weird. They've never done that before. So at first I was suspicious, but I knew it was my bank's website. And that happened two or three times, and now it doesn't happen. So my assumption is that it was the system's attempt to identify the places where I'm most likely to be logging in from. Is that probably what's happening there?
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly right. And more services are operating in that way with multi-factor authentication. So the idea that you have a PIN or a password, but then you also have a device where they can contact you back and verify, are you the right person? And that's a tremendous step in helping to secure yourself and defend yourself.
Yeah, I was actually happy when I realized, okay, this is legitimate, and so that must mean they've increased their security. And, of course, that's always a good thing. The FTC also reports that almost 2.8 million people filed a fraud complaint, which is a record. Imposter scams were most prevalent, but investment scams cost the typical victim the most money. What can you tell us about some of these fraud investment scams? What's happening?
Well, I think there are two things that I generally try to highlight. And the first is sense of urgency. So whenever you are doing an online interaction, you receive a message, and there's a sense of urgency being imparted in the message you're receiving, that should put you at absolute high alert. With investment scams, where they're dangerous, is in addition to often establishing a sense of urgency, there's this technique that we often call like the slow bleed, where you might be led to believe that you've made a lot of money, and then they will slowly work to extract additional funds from you. Really, a lot of people don't wise up to the investment schemes until they've lost not even their initial investment, but additional funds. Especially with the elderly, especially with people that may be desperate, attracted maybe to quick bucks. We've seen this very common where somebody might be significantly in debt and then really interested in these offers that are often too good to be true. That's something you'll hear a lot too good to be true offers. You really have to do due diligence. There are many criminal groups that have the ability to create websites that appear authentic to try to show you or backstop that their investment scheme is legitimate. So, you know, anytime you're not dealing with, I would say, like a name brand sort of investor or somebody you've met in person, you need to be very, very wary, because often those types of investments are not insured either in the way that your banking is. And there's not a lot of recourse for victims at that point.
Yeah, so many scams coming at us from every direction, it seems. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Ethel is in Kenai. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Did you have a question for our experts?
Yeah, I actually had two. One you've already kind of touched upon briefly, which is the multi-factor authentication. I was wondering, is there no overall Alaska regulation or federal regulation that you can utilize? I do most of my banking with a local credit union that knows my spending habits and my travel habits, and staff there have taken it upon themselves, thank you so much, to protect me against fraudulent activity from like Michigan or New York or, you know, another state that I happen not to be in. And I was wondering whether or not that's specific to each bank's own practices, and why my regular bank, which is a regular NAA, a national association, has not done that with me. And two, I have grandnieces and nephews who are as young as age 11 and teenagers all the way up to college age, who are trigger happy when it comes to clicking on links. And so I just and they get their parents into all kinds of tizzies, and so I would like some reminders on or some gentle coaching lessons in how to address that, aside from turn your phone off.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Ethel. Go ahead, Mark. Yes.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and jump in on at least part of that, because there was a lot there and very good points. So one of the things I'll bring up is configuration of your services and things at home. So, for example, you can go in a lot of times either on the phone or on the service, and there are parental controls. So that will help limit that exposure that young kids may have to make those types of purchases. I know Apple has that, and you can set that up. Also, times where they can get to the internet or not. And that can be either on the phone or through just your home service, your internet service. So that's one way. And then also, as we've already kind of talked about, the awareness, taking time to speak with the kids, let them know. Think before you click. So don't trust all these different links and things that you see. And as we've already said, if it's too good to be true, more than likely it is.
Yeah. Elliot, you want to add anything there?
Well, I think, you know, the questions relating to access by youth or younger people is really pertinent to a lot of the things that Mark and I see. There are a lot of criminal groups that are also, in the way you might think of the elderly being targeted, kids are being targeted because kids have more access to the internet than anyone probably had ever anticipated at younger and younger ages, and often on devices that they sort of de facto control. And so in addition to parental restrictions, it can be really important when they're younger, try to confine device usage to public places and try to often ensure that no new applications are installed without parental permissions. And understand that most of the games that your kids are involved in is also their biggest risk factor, because they are doing online gaming in communities with other people, including adults. And there's a lot of scams targeting children, seeking to get photos of the children, but also seeking to get money or other funds from the kids, because they will often sometimes have access to their parents' funds or otherwise. And there are many extortion schemes right now targeting kids. We really want to highlight for parents, make sure to tell your children that people may be trying to extort them, and make sure that they understand they should talk to a trusted adult if that happens. They don't have to deal with it alone, and they're not in trouble. A lot of times these third parties will tell them they're in trouble. They'll be reported to the police. They're a victim, and we will actually try to support the children absolutely as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation today on keeping yourself safe online. We have cybersecurity experts in the building, in the room, in the studio with us today. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And we did have an email from Larry asking, he says, a couple of weeks ago, I got notice my credit card company that someone attempted a charge that was odd, so they declined it. He found the notice was legitimate. His credit card was frozen. A new card would be issued. He says he called to ask if he could learn more. The person said it was a charge based at a New York clothing store, but they couldn't tell me the name of the company. He wants to know if there is a way he can find out the name of the business attempting to charge me. And then he said a related question is, I receive about once a week a robocall claiming to be from Amazon requesting me to ratify or decline a charge for a new smartphone. I get those calls too. He says, I hang up, but wonder what would happen if I hit one as requested. Can you tell me? So the temptation is there. Larry, don't do it, Larry. Don't do it.
Yeah. So what will happen usually when you hit one is you'll get transferred over to a person. And that person generally is going to be in India or West Africa, occasionally the United States. And they're going to describe the problem to you. They're usually assessing your competence. The fact that you've pressed one makes them think that you're a viable target. And if you continue to maybe not ask them great questions or exactly what's going on, they'll soon move you toward a payment solution that will resolve whatever problem you have. So most of the time, those calls are trying to get you to authorize a credit card payment, usually in the range of $3,000 to $5,000. Sometimes they'll ask you for additional information. Sometimes they might be asking you for access to your computer. But most of the time, a lot of those scams are looking to get a fair amount of money out of you as quickly as possible.
All right. Did you want to follow up there, Mark, or can we move on?
Just to piggyback on what Elliot said about gathering other information, and that's something that a lot of these actors will do, is if they feel that there's some resistance around getting the immediate money, they might want to go after other information, like, you know, banking information, or if they don't have your credit card information, oh, you know, can you give us that? We want to put a payment in your account. Different ways to try and gain your confidence, to lower your, you know, for you to lower your guard, so that you can be more engaged and they can set that hook.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Willie is in Anchorage. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. I've always had this notion that using your own computer at the house is more secure than your phone or iPhone, or is there a difference?
That's a great question. So home computer versus your iPhone, what's more secure?
It all depends.
I knew you were going to say
exactly.
That.
Exactly. It's kind of the lawyer, you know, response. But there are obvious reasons for that. So if and we'd absolutely encourage people, whether it's a mobile device or your home computer, make sure that your software, your operating system is up to date. Everything's patched. Do you have antivirus software? So all those things, make sure that they're configured, that they're up to date. Because if they're not, then it's possible that your phone might be more secure than your home device. And alternatively, you do get updates on your phone as well. So it does depend, really, on where you are, what you're doing, how your device is configured. Are you practicing cyber hygiene and awareness?
And you had mentioned, Mark, that routers have internal firewalls, like wireless routers.
A lot of them do. As I think pretty much all of them do now. It used to be you'd have to purchase those separately, but almost all of them now have it built in. But you do have to configure them. So take some time to learn what you have on your particular home router and make appropriate alterations to that.
All right. Willie, I hope that helped a little bit. Thanks for the call. Let's continue on with our guests here. Let's go to John in Sitka on the line. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning. You know, this is fairly commonplace for me anymore, but when it first happened, I was kind of alarmed. And I said, well, how do you already have my credit card? I was doing either, you know, put an order in for yesterday, put an order in for a few things. And, you know, it's businesses that I already had dealings with, but they have my credit card, you know, at least the last four digits. And like I say, when it first happened, I felt pretty uncomfortable, but then it became sort of normal. So I don't know if normal makes it right or safe. So that's the question I'm posing, is if your guests have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I have specifically asked companies, you know, I do not want you to keep. And then I'll call the next month to make my payment, and they already have the information anyway.
That's very true. And we do see that a lot. So definitely, I mean, it can range, right? You can replace your card. You can, but a lot of times, more and more companies share information. And so be aware, whatever vendor or service or company that you're dealing with, what is their privacy policy? Are they going to sell information? Do they share information? And it's sometimes
But if they're selling information, they aren't selling your credit card information, are they?
No, not the credit card information.
Just your name, address.
Exactly.
All that, so.
And then the bad guys can start to kind of bring that information together. So it's a slippery slope. So be careful of what you're sharing out there and what the privacy policies are for whatever vendor you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And the individuals selling your credit card information are usually the criminals. So there are vast secondary markets to resell your personal information, including credit card. But to the caller, one thing to look at is it's possible that you have your credit card number inadvertently stored within your browser. And then each time you go and attempt to make an e-commerce transaction, such as at Amazon or another website, your browser might then also be displaying your credit card because it's stored within the browser. So I would check to see that if you're seeing that your credit card is popping up on new websites that you have maybe never been to before.
All right. Thank you for that. Back to the FTC. There's reports of more than 1.4 million Americans experiencing identity theft in 2021. 1.5 million filed complaints for other concerns, and both are record numbers. So these things are just climbing. And I know it's hard to know what you don't know, but do you have an idea of how much goes unreported every year because people are embarrassed or afraid to tell others about having money or their identity stolen? Mark?
I don't have hard numbers about what we don't know.
Yeah.
to that very point, right? Because they're not reporting it. But obviously, it's going to be much greater than what is reported. What I can say is that, and this is from AARP, 1/3 of charitable donations occur in December. And so that's where we start to see a big spike. And also from AARP, they reported 38% of those who responded to a survey indicated they had received a fraudulent or dubious charity request during that time period. So to your point, the volume is very high. Mm-hmm. It increases during the holiday season. According to the Internet Crime Complaint Center, that's go by IC3, non-delivery and non-payment scams cost people over $337 million last year.
Wow. That's a lot of money going out the door to the bad guys. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Todd is in Anchorage. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Thanks for picking up.
Sure.
I have a question here and appreciate your show because I've been just recently more tussling with the idea which is safer and more secure and all that, to mail in a check to pay my credit card bills. And I've had checks, at least two of them lost in the mail and one stolen from the mail, or do a direct online transfer from my checking account into my credit card account.
So you're wondering what's safer?
Yeah, what's more secure? And I used to think mailing a check would be safer, but not lately, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Elliot?
So what I would generally do is I'm going to do that transaction online. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'll likely go directly to my bank or payment processor's website because I'll know the web address. And when I get there, I want to look in the upper left corner of my browser, and I'm looking for a little lock symbol. And I'm looking for the lock symbol because it tells me that I'm in an HTTPS or encrypted session. And that's also going to tell me that the certificate that that financial institution has to do that encryption matches what it should be. And so at that point, because I've gone there, I haven't clicked a link that showed up in my text messages or an unsolicited email, I know that I'm at the right website. And at that point, ideally, I will be prompted for my multi-factor authentication login, or if it remembers my system, because I've already done that, then I'll rest assured that I'm entering into a secure session, and then I'll just do that payment online that way. But certainly, for example, if I ever got a message saying your bank account is overdrawn, you must pay now, when I get that message driving toward that sense of urgency that's trying to direct me to a third party, I certainly wouldn't follow those steps. So hopefully that answers, but that should be very secure to do an online payment in that way.
And what are your thoughts about old school checks? Are they, I mean, is it just more risky because people can get them out of the mail and maybe cash them?
I don't know that we have a lot of check theft excessively reported. I think there's less payments moving that way, but there's always a risk that something could be stolen out of your mailbox. Normally, if you're watching your account statements, you can identify that, you can communicate with your financial institution, and you should not be held liable, for example, for a stolen check.
All right. Well, Todd, I hope that helped out. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue with more calls and questions on how to keep yourself safe online as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play Store. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking today about cybersecurity, how to keep yourself safe online in today's modern climate of so much commerce online. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to call in with your questions or comments. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. In the studio with me today is Mark Brunig, and Mark is a cybersecurity expert with CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And also in the studio is Elliot Peterson. Elliot is a special agent with the FBI who focuses on cybersecurity issues. So fraud really ballooned during the COVID-19 pandemic. Con artists preyed on people on fear, confusion, selling fake hand sanitizer and masks, and used stolen data to file for unemployment and other benefits. That happened to me. Someone filed for unemployment in another state, and I got a letter from that state's unemployment division asking for some more information. I was like, yikes. So I called them right away and said, this was not me. What do I need to do? I had to put a letter together and send them some information that I've never filed for unemployment. But it was really upsetting. How are people getting this type of personal information for things like filing unemployment claims? Where is that happening?
So we talked a little bit about these bad actors and the information that is available. And we live in a very connected society anymore. So it's very easy for them to get information. They can purchase it legally. They can get it off the dark web. And so those are just some means that they can get that information. It's a lot is publicly available. And then they can go to a website. PFD, there's My Alaska. And so registering there, that is something that I know that the state is working on to bolster the security there. But it's definitely one thing I'll touch on, passwords. And in general, people should not use one account and password for everything. And we see that a lot where I know it's a pain. People don't like to do that, to have multiple passwords for things, but that's one of the best ways to secure yourself and to defend yourself. So if they can get in on Amazon or email or some other, they'll try that same username and password multiple places. And then if they can get in for another service, then yeah, you're compromised.
And do you recommend, when it comes to passwords, I have a host of different combinations that I cycle through with, and I never use the same one on all accounts. I realize that's a really bad idea. Different username, different passwords. But I create my own because I'm suspicious of online things that say, here's what we recommend for your password. Should I use those? They have these huge combinations of letters and symbols and things that Google will recommend or other platforms will say, here's the password that we would recommend. And I think, but what if something happens and I can't get in there? Then I want my own password. What's better?
A strong password, whether it's generated by somebody else or yourself, my personal preference would be to do it yourself, right? Because then you can create a password that might be meaningful for you, more like a phrase there, you know, it makes sense. You might be able to remember it better. But also, as a suggestion, consider using a password manager. Those are applications that you can install and that will manage passwords for you, and you can put it there. That way you only need to remember one account and password to get into that. So that is an option.
Can those get hacked into, though?
Typically not, because it's on your system.
Okay.
And obviously if your computer gets compromised, maybe. But even then, it should be a different password and account. So it is harder, and then they are encrypted.
Let's talk a little bit about the sort of the main target demographics, if there are such a thing. I know that there's a lot of targeting of very young and very old. Are those the two main buckets, or?
I would say not. I think still the main targeted demographics is going to be adults that have access to funds, often that are tied to businesses. So in terms of the principal loss drivers, and you know, that really has to do with sort of how much money is available in the professional class. And so we see a lot of schemes that are targeting just all adults with banking schemes, credit card schemes. One of the things we haven't really talked about that we'd really like to stress is anytime you're trying to make a financial transaction with another person and the topic moves to gift cards, you should run away. But a lot of people haven't heard that yet, and it seems safer or maybe easier than getting cash. And the reason you're being pushed toward gift cards is because the criminal actor, not normally in the United States, can immediately extract the value of that gift card with the number and then basically launder it through other means. And so anytime you're doing a financial dealing with somebody online and they move the topic in that direction, you should be very afraid. And also, if the person you're dealing with refuses to speak on the phone with you, it's really common for them to have excuses why, and it's because they understand they have a strong accent or poor English skills, and they can communicate really well via text or via email, but they can't speak with you on the voice. So if you're going to buy or sell anything with anyone online, we always recommend get on the phone with them, and certainly never give them pictures of gift cards or agree to pay for something with gift cards. And that's sort of on the lower end. On the bigger end, if you're trying to buy a big high-dollar item, be very, very leery of paying first or shipping your product if it's expensive before you've received settled payment. You asked about checks. If you get a cashier's check, make sure you don't ship your product out until you've given time for that check to fully clear, because there's a lot of scams that involve fraudulent cashier's checks where your bank will credit the amount of the check, but it may not clear for several days. And when it's found to be fraudulent, you've already shipped the product and then all that money is taken out of your account.
Wait a minute. I thought cashier's checks were like money in the bank.
Well, they're supposed to be, but the routing number and the ultimate account the funds are drawn from still has to be resolved. And so with fraudulent cashier's check, it's often a gibberish routing number. And your bank is usually doing you a service to immediately credit you the amount of what it assumes will be an authentic check, but it'll take them several days to figure out it's not. And so the criminals operate in that window where it appears you have the money has been posted to your account, but the check itself is not resolved. And so many high dollar frauds are predicated on that aspect of, okay, I got the money, it showed up in my account, I'm in the clear, and then a week later you're out the product and you're out that money. And that's something we see a whole lot.
That absolutely happened to me about, I don't know, a decade ago. I made a impulse buy and then realized, okay, this is something, it was a hot tub, I didn't have a space for it. And so I listed it to sell it, and a guy in New Jersey contacted me and said, oh, I want to buy your hot tub. I said, I'm in Alaska. Really? And he said, yes, I'll send you a cashier's check, and my shipper, then you can pay my shipper and he'll get it, and then you can keep the rest of the money. And I said, I knew it was, you know, had to be ridiculous. It had to be a scam. So I said, well, I'm sure the FBI would be real happy when I give them your phone number. And then I didn't hear from them again, of course. But so that's how that works, mm-hmm. is there's that time lag.
And in that scheme, what they'll often do is they'll preload some of the funds. So they're going to say, okay, your hot tub's $8,000, but I'm going to have a shipper expediter. I'm going to send you his check, $3,000, and he's going to show up at your door. You're going to mail that out to him. So they try to hit you twice, because you're now going to be out that entire check value, but you're also going to have paid out some portion in the middle of that. That's really, really common.
They're out there, those shysters. All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Kristen is in Anchor Point. Hello.
Hello. First, I want to say that I have no internet or cell phone. I have a landline, and yet that didn't stop me from getting a call to try to find out information about my account. It was the usual. They supposedly said they represented my credit union. They didn't. I gave them no information, called my credit union to find out who I could call. They gave me the FBI number in Anchorage. And then I said, well, who with the state of Alaska, like the Attorney General's office, should I be able to call? And they said, well, they didn't know of anybody with the Attorney General's office. Now, I know the fellow that's with you, he is in Palmer, but he does not represent the Attorney General's office, and he has no real prosecution power. Maybe he has the ability to do some investigation, but no prosecution power. Does the state of Alaska itself, through the Attorney General, have any type of control over this? Are they actively attempting to stop this? Because I know in other states, the Attorney General offices are very interested in getting this stopped and actively try to investigate all this with the federal government.
Mark, you did work for the state at one point, right?
I did, yes. So prior to taking this role, I was the chief information security officer for the state of Alaska. And right now, the state has a fusion center, which is run by the state police, and they do investigate crimes. So you certainly could reach out to them. Beyond that, I can't really speak to what the state is doing at this point in time. Sure. I know that they definitely care for the people, and they are making steps to respond to the public. But I would reach out to at least the State Fusion Center and definitely the FBI, as you mentioned, as well as CISA as well.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, you mentioned that you have a landline rather than a cell phone. Is one safer than the other, or can people get equally scammed on both?
Well, if you're talking about incoming calls, right, you could get scammed on both. I would say that the phone itself, in addition to being a telephone, is also a computer. And so that carries a whole host of additional risks with it on a mobile phone. But what she's likely a victim of is these criminal groups will basically robo-dial mass numbers, Alaska numbers. They don't necessarily care if they're landlines or if they're phones, trying to talk to someone, which is what happened to her.
All right, let's go back to email again. This is Gail, who says, I did press 1 on the call that Amazon was holding a purchase of a phone on my account, and the person wanted me to put a code in my computer because they said that was the only way to cancel the purchase. I hung up, checked my Amazon account myself, and there was no purchase pending. So good on you, Gail, that you were wise enough not to follow through. There are... if you do a quick search, you'll bring up lots of identity theft protection service organizations. Do you recommend that people use these paid services to protect themselves? And if so, how do consumers know who to go with, who's reputable? Mark?
So that definitely is an option. We wouldn't say, don't do it. But a lot of times it's what we call left of boom and right of boom. So a boom is an incident. Something bad happened, you got compromised. Prevention is worth a pound of cure. So anything that you can do to prepare ahead of time is better. A lot of what we see in that regard to the identity protection services is right of boom. So when something has happened, you've been compromised, or we've seen this where a service that you have used, they got compromised, and you might get a letter in the mail saying, hey, this happened, we got hacked. Actually, state of Alaska elections did get compromised, and many people got a letter saying for a year you will get free identity protection. So it is worthwhile depending on your particular circumstance, so something to think about. And as far as who is reputable, can't mention specific vendors,
sure.
But if you do a little bit of research, you can see the big name people out there, and they would be fine to go with.
Elliot?
It's lower down on my list of sort of the things that I would ask the normal person to be thinking about, which is different than saying you shouldn't check your credit every year and see if people are opening accounts or if you've had credit cards open that you're not aware of. That's really important. But there's a lot of work you can do to make sure that your phone and your computer and, you know, just multi-factor, understanding passwords, understanding the criminal economy and how you might be targeted, that's a lot more important to me than this idea that some third party is magically going to lock your accounts down.
Mm-hmm. Do you recommend, I froze my credit once I refinanced my house. I knew I didn't want any more credit cards, so I just froze my credit. One of my sons thinks I'm silly for doing that. He thinks it's overkill. Am I?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, there's so much information about any given person that's floating around in these criminal economies being bought, sold, traded. If you don't have big purchase on the horizon, I don't see any issue with doing that. And we really do recommend that sort of everybody kind of at a yearly basis probably do the free credit check, review your credit, make sure, because that might be the sign that something's wrong, that your social security number is out there, your passwords are out there. It gives you a chance to sort of head that off before things get worse.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here is a question from a caller by email that says, Greg wants us to relay his question, can phone numbers be co-opted for scamming purposes? I'm quite sure that they can, because one time I looked at my phone and the number was my number calling me. It says he tried calling one of the numbers he got a scammy text message from, and it belonged to a woman in Wasilla. So how does that work, that they can somehow take someone else's phone number and make a call?
We call it spoofing, and there's ways to essentially force the caller ID function to display an incorrect number. And the FCC has been working, and there have been changes made over the last few years just to minimize this. But in certain scenarios, it is still possible to have a display number different than the calling number. The carrier would still see the difference. But it is a reason that you can be suspicious when you see a number coming across, you know, your phone in terms of who it really is. It's common to see your own number because that's easy for them to sort of access and dial. Mm. I wouldn't necessarily expect to be getting a call from like a close friend's phone number and have it be a scammer. That's not really something that I've seen happen before.
A friend of mine had that happen, and just it was a nightmare for her because she just kept getting calls from people who were angry that they were getting scam attempts from her phone number. She ended up having to change her phone number.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's a pretty drastic step, but I guess that's what you're going to have to do. So are there some new scams that people should be aware of? I know that there's a myriad of different attempts, but are there some recent things that you've seen that are of particular note that you would want folks to be aware of? I know, Elliot, in an earlier interview you talked about, and you talked a little about this earlier too, large purchases online. You mentioned the purchase of a tractor.
Yeah. So, you know, anytime you're looking to buy a big high dollar item on the secondary market from another individual and you're going to websites like Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, there are, in certain categories, I would say probably as much fraud as there is sort of real items for sale. And so just be aware when you're getting pushed toward voice communication with somebody, the price is too good to be true or better than market value. You're being encouraged to act quickly. They're trying to create a sense of urgency, and you're going to send the funds in some sort of unsecured fashion. You're at a really, really high risk for fraud. But, you know, we're also seeing a lot of instances of government impersonation. So this is where you get a call or a text saying, hey, this is Joe with the IRS. And if you'll pay me $5,000 in Apple gift cards or Amazon gift cards, you can get out of the trouble you're in. Those are never real, and anytime you receive a call like that, we encourage people, call your local office of whatever law enforcement agency it is and let them know you got that call. We are never going to ask you to pay for any fine over the phone in that matter, and never ask for you to pay anything with gift cards. So if you have kids, if there's elderly people in your lives, make sure that you reinforce that with them. That's something they need to hear from you before they hear it from the bad guy. We mentioned extortion. There's been a lot of extortion, and there's a lot of increasing investment schemes surrounding cryptocurrency because it's very volatile and very poorly understood in some segments. We're seeing a lot of movement there with some of the more traditional investment fraud schemes that may have more been centered toward stocks or 401k or other things. They've now moved into the crypto markets.
All right, thank you for that. We are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue with more calls, emails, and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? you have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
All right, we're back. We had an email question. Excuse me, I'm having trouble today. From Mary Ann in Fairbanks. She said, I had a message left on my cell phone that came from Ketchikan. It sounded like a scam. I called the state troopers. They were not interested unless I had been a victim of a scam. She says, why not? Mark?
So that's a very good question. And part of the answer to that is law enforcement has a different role. Right. And so they're out to get the bad guy and that something has to happen.
Yeah. It's to trigger their investigation.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where, again, with CISA, we're a different place, different segment. We're here for prevention as well as, like I said, the right of boom after something happens. So that's a short answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Another question by email was from Martin in Fairbanks. He took credit card paperwork and files to a free shredding service at his credit union and soon after had false charges on that credit card and wonders if there's ever been reports of fraud through free shredding services.
I personally haven't heard of that, but I'm not surprised.
Could happen, I suppose.
If it's free, it's, yeah.
Or, I have a shredder of my own at home.
There you go. Perfect.
That stuff through. I learned that so many years ago from my own mom who had a shredder, and I thought it was hilarious. I came to visit her, and she had this shredder, and I said, Mom, really? I mean, you don't have classified documents. And she said, you should not throw away credit card applications or any of that sort of thing. And she was right. So can companies be hacked and send you what looks like a legitimate message for payment, but then your funds end up in a crook's account? Can that happen?
It can, and it has. A lot of times what we see more is spoofing, and we talked a little bit about that. So it might be, it's a reputable company, but somebody sets up a very similar website. And they redirect traffic to it. And so you don't even know that you're putting your information into a false website and now you become compromised. But it is possible, and we have seen where companies do get compromised. That does happen. And obviously we work with them in those instances.
Mm-hmm. And it's endemic, if I can add, in certain market segments. So for example, escrow services, right? If you think about the function of an escrow service, they're usually a business that's designed to hold funds for some period of time upon the conclusion of a financial transaction. Those types of companies are targeted with an out sort of sized regularity because if they're in the accounts of the escrow service, what they can do at the final stages is often send an updated email saying, hey, actually change this information for the wiring information, change this routing information. And that's something we see a lot. And so if you're a business that sends funds or does large payments and you often do online communication, we really recommend confirm banking, routing, wire account information via voice or face-to-face. And if it ever changes in the middle of a transaction, stop everything and talk to that company because there's millions and millions of dollars that have been fraudulently stolen because someone was in another company's account, had access to the email, changed the payment instructions, and at the very last minute, the payment then goes to the wrong account. And by the time it's discovered, you can't recover it. And that happens with an alarming frequency. And so looking for that change, having that voice-to-voice communication, that can go a long way toward preventing that type of thing.
That is so scary. It just makes you feel like, I don't want to be online. But of course, that's where everything is headed. I mean, we can't avoid it. And so just taking these extra steps to make sure that people are safe is so important. Here's a note from Bonnie asking, what can I do to stop spam calls on my iPhone? That's her first question. And her second question is, how can I verify my internet provider is providing, that my internet provider provided router is secure? So she's got GCI and she wants to know, how do I know that router is okay?
So you can do a little bit of learning, and you can actually go into that router and you can look at the security settings. You can also contact your internet service provider, and they, by and large, will help you and walk you through some of those things, and make sure it's updated again, that, you know, the latest firmware and patches are applied to that device. So that's definitely something that people, we encourage them to do. And one other thing that I think we haven't touched on, but is also very important, and it's that right of boom after something happens, but to think about it and to prepare ahead of time, which is backups. Typically, we talk about backups in the corporate setting, right? But it's equally as important for individuals that in the event you get compromised, it could be a hard copy of your tax records and important records. Make sure that you have that or electronic on a separate hard drive stored away somewhere so that if your system does get compromised, you have something to go back to. It's very important.
And then you don't have the risk of if somebody is asking for ransom of your data, you can say, shove off because I already have a copy, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's good. It'd be nice to be able to tell the scamsters to shove off. That's for sure. You both at the FBI and at CISA offer to do informational gatherings with groups, correct? Tell us a little about that.
Well, I think, you know, Mark and I both really believe that security is an ongoing conversation that we need to have with a lot of groups. And so, you know, if your city or your, your group or organization would like to ask for one of us to come out and talk about security, we're always interested in seeing those requests, and where available, we'd love to do that. And, you know, similarly, if you think you've been victim of a crime, we really encourage people to report it. Report it to us, report it to IC3 via IC3.gov. We can use that information. Sometimes you might have information based on your fraud scheme that helps us find the person that did it to a bunch of other people. So
people shouldn't be embarrassed.
They not at all. Yeah, this happens to everybody.
Right. It's they're pretty sophisticated. So you're willing to go and meet with groups and bring this information to them?
Absolutely. Awareness is key. Right, to being prepared to get the message out. October was Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and so there were a lot of speaking engagements that we went to, and covering students, covering a lot of different organizations to really help them understand that as a community, we need to be aware and we need to support each other.
Are you seeing, we only have about 30 seconds left here now or so, but are you seeing much in Alaska for student debt repayment scams?
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of that. If you get a phone call offering any sort of student loan repayment, it's a scam. It's not the federal government calling. Hang up and don't answer. And if it's happened to you, let us know. But there's a lot of that going on right now.
There is. Okay. And are there specific, we talked a little about this earlier, but what specific Alaska scams do you see?
We see right now that you'll get text or calls from local financial institutions. They know that you're going to trust your local bank. Your banks are not asking you to provide your account information, log into another website. They're never going to send you a text message saying that. Feel free to ignore those.
Yeah, so no matter how urgent the message is, don't do it. It's not from your bank. Thanks so much to my guests, Mark Brunig, who is with CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and Elliot Peterson in the studio with us today as well. He's a special agent with the FBI and focuses on cybersecurity. Thanks to our team that helped get the show on air, our engineer Chris Hyde, producer Madeline Rose, and on the phones today, Michael Finelli helped us out. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.